hello. This is the Sober Positive Workplace series brought to you by Show Up and Stay. I'm your host, Deanne Knighton. I've been eager to get this episode out into the world. This is my conversation with Earl Murphy, the current president of Soberforce. I've mentioned Soberforce several times on this podcast, as to me, there seems to be a tremendous value for other organizations to consider this model in developing sober communities within their own enterprises. The program started from employee-driven grassroots efforts based on a high level of need during the pandemic and has been embraced fully by Salesforce. I will also be posting an episode later in the month that I recorded with one of the founding members of Soberforce. But for today, I want you to meet Earl. It is so amazing to have you with us today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thrilled to be here.
I've been really looking forward to this conversation.
It's great to meet you. I have been a big fan of your work and really love listening to the podcast. And I think that we have so much in common, not only being sober in the world today, but also shining a light on the importance of recovery-friendly, sober-friendly workplaces.
I really want to start with the meat of this, which is the human side. Before we dive into learning more about you as it relates to the workplace and Soberforce and the work that's being done there, I want to start with just learning about your story.
I lived in a drinking culture. I'm from Arlington, Massachusetts, which ironically was a dry town when I grew up. And perhaps there's more motivation there. I want what I can't have. But really, from age 15 to 37, I drank routinely, weekly, weekend warrior, college, president of my fraternity, captain of the baseball team, and could never figure out how to take a break. I thought drinking was cool for a while, but after a while, it wasn't cool. It became a big problem for me in my life. So, you know, coming into recovery and seeking help in the beginning was very hard for me. It still is very gritty road that we travel. It's simple. Don't drink today and do that forever. That's very hard. Very, very hard. Especially for me, just having been conditioned from my upbringing, immersed and surrounded by alcohol. So early in my recovery, being surrounded by people who get it, I went the AA route. I share that not to break anonymity or to upset anybody or communities, but just to share. It's 2023. You know, I've been sober a little over 5 years, and it's a formula that worked for me. So I want other people to know what has worked for me. And it was the people in AA, in early recovery, who swore me and taught me. And that has been a formula that I carry forward in all facets of my life. I try to learn from mentors, sponsors, people who are willing to help somebody else.
I need to comment on what you said right out the gate about New Hampshire being dry or in the dry county. So I am actually from Utah. For anyone who doesn't know, there's a population in Utah that is primarily abstinence-based, and there are even counties that are completely dry as well. And I have often wondered about what you speculated on, which is this idea of, is there something here about the energy that we've put around this thing, about this idea of abstinence that then has led to some of the dysfunctional relationships that people end up having with alcohol later on. I have felt like this needs to be a research paper, or somebody needs to be looking at this.
I grew up in Arlington, Massachusetts, and on every border, Cambridge, Lexington, Meffa, Medford, were liquor stores. And then, you know, deep across the border were the ones that would sell to minors. And that immediately became, again, a social currency. Who can buy? Who has access? Who's getting it? And that, to me, is alcoholic thinking that I've learned. That is my mind wanting more before it has any. And I saw that as early as 15, trying to just rally status and friends through alcohol. It was the formula that I grew up with.
I can relate to that. You mentioned that accepting help, receiving help, asking for help as being part of the challenge for you. It absolutely was for me. I'm curious, from your perspective, what were some of the barriers in getting the help that you needed?
There is so much vulnerability in sobriety. And I recognize now that there's so much strength to be gained from reaching out for help. And also that when I was drinking and in that active loop of alcoholism, that I never could get a break from drinking. I never took any time off. It may be Monday through Thursday, or maybe a couple of weeks, or maybe like a 30-day, maybe something. We did the whole 30 challenge, Melissa Hartwig, once. And the number one thing I wanted on day 31 was a vodka tonic. And, you know, that wasn't a red flag to me 7 years ago. But now I see that's not what I would consider normal today for myself. I mean, primary barriers were me, myself, and I was my own biggest obstacle. I was the last one to see and understand that I had a problem. And again, growing up in a drinking culture, working as in a sales culture, corporate America, I was given an open bar travel and expense opportunity to support my habits and lifestyle in a culture that embraced it and promoted it. All of that exacerbated, and I was in my own way. I thought that that normal progression of career and status went hand in hand with drinking, that like on one of your episodes, being a madman, you know, that that sort of Madison Avenue elitism, I grew up with that. You know, my mom's side of the family is old money and just old school. So that's what I grew up with. I had to see around myself in order to see through and connect. And I needed so much help. Other people needed to tell me what was really here, because I had warped, made up stories and just delusional perception of what was going on.
Yeah. You know, I think that's interesting. That's actually, I think, one of the hardest things that I found to admit, but also the most freeing, was realizing that all the thoughts in my head were not facts. Once I figured that out, it felt so freeing. Oh, if I let in different things, I can start to change this narrative that is obviously not serving me.
I had never really been honest with myself or other people my whole life, whatever it was, whether it was an essay writing in college or a story being told to a friend, just an exaggeration of the truth or a diminishment of the truth. It wasn't just straight down the middle. So again, sobriety has helped me just adopt a lifestyle of rigorous honesty and being honest with myself. To your point of just knowing yourself, it continues to be a long discovery for me. And thankfully, it excites me. You know, I want to learn more. I want to understand more. And it's hard, but it's something that I'm drawn to.
Earl is the current president of SoberForce, a business resource group supporting sobriety in the workplace. He is also an enterprise account executive at Salesforce. He is a husband, a father to two little souls, and a human 5 years in recovery.
So I'll take it back to, I graduated from Syracuse in 2003. So I've been out of college in the workforce for 20 years. And in those 20 years, going from the just drink by default happy hour, everybody leaves work at 4:30 and we go drink booze. That was just like going to the cafeteria, you know, it was that standard. All the way to fast forward to today, I'm the president of SoberForce at Salesforce. Who knew? And that 20-year span to me is mind-blowing. Just huge shout out to Salesforce for creating the space for SoberForce to exist. SoberForce is completely volunteer employee run. It is one of many employee resource groups, including VetForce, FaithForce, OutForce, AbilityForce, a whole range of community. And Salesforce calls its culture the Ohana, which it goes beyond family. It's to the community and really all the stakeholders. We've evolved from this employee resource group to a business resource group where we're doing work like this and sharing our stories and trying to help other organizations implement similar strategies. And that's all grassroots effort, which is so inspiring. And to your original question, it's startling to see that the majority of the working world, let's say corporate America, is still 20 years dated. It's still alcohol centered. It's still drink by default. People are still scared and still shameful of potential stigma or ramifications. They'll lose their job. You know, all these major, major fears that, in my opinion, only exacerbate the problems of addiction and substance abuse. So it's this twisted cycle. Super grateful. 2 years ago, there were a handful of people at Salesforce who stood up and had the courage in the pandemic to say, hey, I'm struggling. I know that we live in recovery. There have to be more people out there that are hurting right now. How do we create community? Just that ember, you know, flickers within Salesforce and has caught fire to the point that so much recognition at Dreamforce and really had a marquee event, the only sober event on the entire social calendar at Dreamforce. And the demand and response affirm that we're onto something. People are looking for something different, not because they can't figure it out, because they want to hang out with a sober person. They want to take a break from the previous 4 days of being out late drinking or whatever. Maybe their religious reasons or health reasons. There's so many reasons. We've been fortunate to create a big inclusive space with Sober Force that just because you come through the door doesn't mean that you're going to get a label of, oh, I wonder what Earl did. Wonder what his problem is. These are allies, people who are showing up saying, hey, my relative, friend, family member is in trouble. What do you do? What do I do? Who can I call? We talk about intersection events. So it could be an intersection with another employee group, Faith Force, honoring sobriety at work during this religious observation and helping educate employees why sobriety should be respected because of religious beliefs or principles. So Sober Force has helped me personally open my eyes and broaden the aperture on what it means to be sober or sober curious or an ally. It's helped me just be way more comfortable because all I know is my path. But I've gotten to meet so many living a sober life that come from all sorts of different backgrounds.
It goes to what you were saying about the truth telling and all of a sudden finding yourself surrounded with people who do shoot straight. Oh, wow. We just cut through multiple conversations in this one fell swoop and can be just really life affirming.
For me personally, I use the word integrated, that I get to go to work as the same version of myself that I present to my wife and kids. I'm the same version that I present to my neighbors or friends or other parents in the community, that Jekyll and Hyde toggling when I did drink, it's exhausting. There was a major cleanup effort that would have to come after it. It was all this transition and recontextualizing. It broke me after a while. I couldn't do it. It was too heavy and complicated and chemically imbalanced. And this path of sobriety to me is undeniable. Even if I didn't have a disease or a chronic illness, innately I knew I was unhealthy, that the amount that I could and did drink, you can't outwork that level of you can't outpace that. You just can't break that cycle, or at least I couldn't. I don't think other people can either.
One of the things I've always had issue with is that comment of, oh, it's just business, it's not personal. I didn't know what that meant. I mean, if I was taking on a business identity, spending that portion of my life representing, like you said, that version of myself, whatever that may be, hopefully one that's integrated into who I am, that's the healthier way to be. Unfortunately, it wasn't. And that was part of what kept me sick.
It's a complicated puzzle to put together and see a clear picture of individual wellness. And to have that picture continue to be iterated and refined and enhanced, for me, it was stopping drinking. That's number one. But then physical, mental, spiritual, like all these pieces, I needed to change everything about myself. And it's possible. And I'm not done by any means. Think about shavings on a pile. You know, when Andy Dufresne escaped prison in Shawshank Redemption, how he just dribbled a couple pebbles out of his pant leg, but he tunneled his way to freedom. Mm-hmm. And I think about that. I think about that just a little crumb today, just a little, you know, and if I do that daily, I've seen the equity pile up. And I know our focal point is the workplace, but I do just want to continue to give a shout out for how much better my life is sober, not only as a employee, but as a dad and as a husband and as a student, you know, whatever I'm studying and learning, as a neighbor, friend, son, just showing up as the best version of myself is my goal. And I can see I was not doing that when drinking.
This isn't just about willpower and just saying, oh, but I just shouldn't do it. There is so much more going on, like you said, with brain chemistry and all of these realities of what early sobriety is like, some of the things that you might experience in early sobriety, depending on levels of drinking. There's so much that goes into that too, from an educational standpoint, that I think is really important for people to understand as part of the bigger message.
You know, thinking about the workplace and just the different dynamics that drinking in the workplace perpetuates, I think it was on your podcast where you're talking about just being included. You know, if the team is sharing news and if the team is bonding at the pub or after hours, what is the currency? That's what I meant when I talked about drinking as currency and status. You know, do you have a bar stool? Do you have a mug with your name ingrained on it? Like, that is this illusion of status that I fell for. And a lot of people still do. I'm not saying people are dumb for falling for that, because I did for years. And I see the lure and I get it. But today I want to say that it doesn't have to be like that. It can be different. And you can elevate your team, get closer to your customers, and experience success like you never dreamt about while sober, not pushing booze in the middle of your business, whatever that is, whether it's team related, customer, event. Just removing alcohol was my first step, but it's really been this past year that I've come out in the workplace, that I have just worn my sobriety on my sleeve, and I've had to do it because I'm the president of Sober Force. Stepping into that identity has been a real growing process for me. And the original president of Sober Force, Chris Anthony, has a website called The Sober Executive. He waited 15 years to come out with his sobriety. And, you know, he said it was like 15 too long. And so that's a big part of my courage to come out. And it does feel like coming out, because there's a serious stigma with sobriety. I want to see a corporate reality where people are openly sober and it's not a big deal. That it doesn't come with this pause or this wonder. No judgment, no stigma, just, you know, moving forward like you're gluten-free or whatever.
How do we make it not a thing? You know, I think you touched on something really key earlier around the broad range of alcohol relationships that can exist, the variety of reasons that someone may be choosing not to drink, and also the reality, too, that maybe for those who aren't as familiar with the sober space, how much is shifting around understanding of gray area drinking, understanding of just relationship to alcohol in general, whether or not it's adding value or not, looking at that and saying, hey, maybe I want to try not doing this. That in and of itself is a completely different definition than we have been used to seeing. It was either you have a problem with drinking or you don't. I love seeing that there is more room now for ambiguity. There's the gray area. There is the room for two things to be true at the same time. I like to speak about that because I do think that maybe if you don't spend as much time hanging out in sober spaces, you may not realize how much is out there that is not even what you might have in mind for sobriety.
It's so true. The world is changing. Sobriety is fashionable. We're all gets hit with the most recent news of Matthew Perry's passing and trying to make sense of addiction, the disease of addiction, the broad spectrum range of addiction. Because if it's not alcohol or substance abuse, it can be consumerism, it can be attention, it can be fitness, it can be money, it can be sex, whatever it is, there is this escapism syndrome that I can identify with. Ways to take me out of my reality. And I see that I wanted that because life is hard. Reality is hard. And so how do I numb that? And, you know, how do I move away from that? I just applaud the work that so many more people are doing on themselves, that recognizing you are your number one customer and that everybody benefits from an optimized Deanne, that the world is better when you're at your best. And I think companies are starting to recognize the business value in a recovery-friendly workplace. I'm no CFO, but I mean, what would it look like to a company's bottom line if you could no longer expense alcohol? What would a company's bottom line look like if you decentered alcohol from all your events? What would employee retention, employee satisfaction, building security? At the happy hour at Dreamforce, was hosted in the Salesforce Tower. And one of the best surprises that I got from that event was the building security team saying to us, this is the first event we've ever had where we know there's no alcohol in there. And that changed their perception and we were more connected. One of the security guards opened up and, you know, shared a personal story with me about somebody in his family struggling with their disease and addiction. And just that connection is so special. And to see it in our building, in our office spaces, and to welcome other partners, customers, people who gravitated towards that. We had one sponsor, Sumeru, based in California. They've never in their 20 plus years of being in business, they've never had an alcohol event. They've never served alcohol at their events, zero. That's one extreme end of a cultural spectrum. But again, it exists. These companies are out there. There are groups of people, surprise, surprise, that choose not to drink or are interested in drinking less. Definitely a progressive space. And I'm very thankful because it gives me more comfort and room in the world to be sober.
We'll be right back. Sober Positive Workplace, a division of Show Up and Stay, is a nonprofit on a mission to help organizations bridge the recovery gap, a space that exists for individuals between healing from a substance and healing their lives. We partner with organizations to build more inclusive environments that reflect an investment in sober positivity and awareness. These organizations are normalizers, pushing back against stigma and doing their part to change the social consciousness. For more information, please visit our website at soberpositiveworkplace.org. Now back to the show.
Earl, now I have to tell you about my Dreamforce story.
Yes, please.
So this would have been, now I have to think of timing. So I've been sober, similar timeline to you, just under 5 years. And the first year and a half, 2 years of sobriety, I was very quiet about it. And I had been in sales for a company for a long time. And I actually ended up leaving that job, not directly related to my sobriety, but I was crashing and burning and I just needed to reset my life. Sometimes things just hit a wall. It hit a wall. I was very lucky to have resources to do that. And that's something I think about all the time. There are some things that I had to do that cost some money that have changed my life. And I think this access issue is a big deal. That said, I still struggle to embrace sobriety as something that I wore on my sleeve. A year into being sober, I started a new job with an organization that is also sales because that's what I know how to do. And in that organization, we focus on actually staffing Salesforce consultants. And I came in a leadership position, which felt very scary for me because I was trying to get buy-in from people and I did not know how to do it without alcohol. I didn't have a tool outside of buying people a beer. Honestly, it was so sad that I went, man, I have put a lot of stake in how alcohol makes me likable and that somehow I am unlikable without it. I was invited to work the Dreamforce booth during my first year of sobriety, not really being in that type of environment for a while. So I was horrified, but I also felt this pull. I'm like, I'm new here. I need to connect with people. I certainly don't want to say no. A lot of people would see this as such a huge opportunity.
I'm in my first year at this company. There's people who have been here who have wanted to do this and I get to go. So how could I say no? I did tell those that I was with that I wasn't drinking, and I did participate in events throughout the week that involved a lot of drinking, and I would just go and drink a Red Bull or whatever, and we would just joke about my non-drinking. I was still definitely anxious about it. You know, I was trying to just avoid the topic. This was the first time I experienced how much pressure that there is around this drinking culture. And this is not an indictment of anyone, because I get it. There is that feeling of, oh, well, if you're not drinking, that makes me feel weird. And I want us to be in this together. Well, this one person was very much just not sure about my non-drinking, to the point that during one of the days at the booth, they were serving wine, I guess, like in the afternoon on the floor. He poured wine into his coffee cup and said, oh, I just got this coffee. It's really good. You should taste it. Hands it to me, thinking as a joke, right? And I took a sip of wine. I mean, I am a person in recovery, right? Like that felt, gosh, I'm going to get emotional if I talk about it, because to him, it was just a joke, right? And it didn't seem like a big deal. But I know, I saw your face, Earl. You know, like that was a big deal and kind of jarring. And it actually, though, led me on the path to go, you know what? I want to be more vocal about this, because this is bullshit.
Total bullshit move there from your colleague, and sad to see other people in that example don't know any better. And I myself, I could have been that person in a different life, being an orchestrator, an instigator. I had no concept of alcoholism. I had no concept of people really struggling. I thought that if you weren't drinking, that it was just a choice, a personal thing. And like, you didn't understand. We were just incongruent. It's really scary, because it is life or death, in my opinion. And kudos to you for putting up the defense. In that week, this past Dreamforce was my first Dreamforce. For those who don't know, about 50,000 people take over San Francisco. This is a customer event. And in years past, it's been 150,000 people, where they bring cruise ships in and completely sell out the city. You can just imagine the magnitude and energy around socialization. And what do people do when they want to feel more comfortable in those situations? They drink. And that by default activity, just drawing on my experience from this year's Dreamforce, it's different. It sounds like you really could have used the Dreamforce Sober Force happy hour.
Yes, I would have been so there.
For anybody who finds themselves at a Salesforce event, particularly Dreamforce, you now know that Sober Force exists. And what we talk about is having presence, just raising your hand and saying, hey, I'm Earl, part of Sober Force. Does anybody want to grab a coffee? Does anybody want to go on a walk in the morning? Does anybody want to grab dinner? Creating space and simply having presence is our big focus this year, because we are pretty young. So as we establish ourselves and figure out how to be a bigger presence out across the whole, not just the Salesforce community, but the whole workforce community, and show other companies what our formula is, and at least tell the stories of importance. Yours is a perfect example. What you experience can end your life. That's what I didn't understand about alcoholism and the disease of alcoholism when I was drinking. I didn't realize that it really could burn me so badly that I could die. And booze is poison. There's a reason. There's skull and crossbones on it. Like, it is, if alcohol was invented today, there's no way it would be legal. Anyone can tell me otherwise. And I get that the money and commercialization is so huge that it is here to stay, at least for now. But how can we as individuals make better choices? The Sober Force event at Dreamforce gave people that space. No matter what your motivation, if you're fighting for your life in the first year of sobriety, or for whatever reason, you want to be around people that you know are not drinking, there's huge safety in that. And last year we had somebody leave the event. I was not at the event last year, but a guest, a customer attended. He was in a crisis, a personal crisis. And he credits that Sober Force happy hour as saving his life. He got our logo tattooed on his arm. And he came back this year, a year later, telling the story of how that event saved his life. Because like you, he was out at sea and he needed a life raft. He needed community, a safe space. And that's what's so awesome. You don't have to be in trouble to go looking for a better way of life. You don't need to be punished into sobriety. You can choose it. This year, we're going to get behind a big Dry January campaign. And again, opening my eyes to what it means to be a gray area drinker or a normal drink, whatever that is. That people don't get a break. I can see now. People don't get a 30-day break in a normal 12-month calendar. There's a holiday or a drinking event rolling through every couple of weeks. And how do you get a break? And I guess the statistics show of Dry January, people who stop for 30 days either continue with stopping their drinking forever or drastically reduce. And to give people that benefit is something I'm excited about, because I'm not here saying you have to be sober. So let me read our vision statement. And anybody who, up until now, if you're unclear on what Sober Force is, here it is. So Salesforce is a trailblazer in all aspects of employee health and wellness. Sober Force is a place of support, inspiration, and connection for our sober and sober curious employees, allies, and to our recovery community, and promotes safety and inclusion in all engagements and environments. We are raising awareness via our own recovery stories as we seek to lead authentically and vulnerably, striving to facilitate an environment that encourages others to speak up in seeking help. We believe this visibility will set the stage for other companies to help employees globally across all organizations. That's our vision statement. And again, with the focus being external, shout out to companies like Amazon, Wayfair, Lockheed Martin, Equifax, Google, Lyra Health, who's our mental health provider. Lyra has adopted, created its own Sober Force community for its 2,000 employees. They're going to be participating in Dry January with us. So collectively, we'll have almost 85,000 people between Salesforce and Lyra exposed to this Dry January campaign. And just really honored to be able to share. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate you.
For more information, please visit our website, soberpositiveworkplace.org, or showupandstay.org. This podcast is written, created, and produced by me, Deanne, featuring music from the wickedly talented Katie Hare.